And Lord, Anjan, Ajana, the carrier of the sword, protect you through sides. May Lord Urugada, the carrier of the conch shell, protect you from all corners. May Upendra protect you from above. May Garuda protect you on the ground. And may Lord Baladara, the Supreme Person, protect you on all sides. Report. Even in the houses of the cultivators, who are not very advanced in the modern ways of civilization, the ladies used to know how to chant mantras to give protection to children with the help of cow dung and cow urine. This was a simple and practical way to give the greatest protection from the greatest dangers. People should know how to do this, for this is part of Vedic civilization. See here a very interesting presentation Srila Prabhupada is giving to this verse and the mood of the gopis that are here. The Prabhupada is saying the cultivators here, the Vaishnavas, they're not very advanced in the modern ways of civilization. So, the ladies used to know how to do it. So they're not very advanced in the modern ways of civilization. Now, it says, not here, because it starts with even. Now, as he said, the Vaishnavas are not very, up to date on the modern ways of civilization. Or if they had said that, in those days they were not like people of modern day, then you could understand that modern here means today, and what they're doing is, 5,000 years ago. But he just puts it in the context of this, just making a statement, matter of fact, that even in the houses of the cultivators, who are not really advanced in the modern ways of civilization, the ladies used to know how to chant mantras to give protection to children with the help of cow dung and cow urine. So even though they weren't very advanced, they still knew at least this much. So here what he's meaning, modern, means, that which is up to date and that which is happening at the present, whatever is happening at the time. So modern, then taken in this context, meant those who were following very seriously in a sophisticated way, knowing all technicalities of how the society functions, those people were called modern. And the village people were a bit rustic. This is a very different approach than we find most people are giving to the Vedic culture. In other words, Vedic culture is up to date. That you're knowledgeable, you're educated, you know how things work and function. And therefore, that is an up to date person. And someone who doesn't know this, then they're a bit rusty. Like this. A little, behind in the times. So someone may complain, that this would be an improper presentation of this, because we know modern, that there are so many things that are known that previously people did not know. So then, if one approaches from this light, then if we look at it, so what do we mean modern? Modern, generally we mean scientific. That the modern man is not a sentimentalist. He does things, with thought, with attention. In other words, he's conscious of what he does. Just like the modern man is never controlled by his senses, right? It means that he's attracted to something, a sense object. That is with due and complete consideration. And with great thought has gone into it, some plan is there, some standard he has how to act and all that. Isn't that the way modern civilization is going on? Or do we find people are, by their unbridled senses, are just dragged along the path of sense gratification? Right? Think about it. In other words, modern man is not conscious, really, of what he's doing. His senses being dragged around, he's not conscious of that. But because everybody else does it, it's taken as normal. So therefore, we see that modern, or being urban and being rustic, is not a matter of the specific surroundings, but it's a matter of the consciousness of the individual, what they know. So now, scientifically, one could say, yes, we're very scientific, up-to-date, modern. You take the average man in the street, or even those who are sitting here. Can you explain how a computer works? Can you explain how the, you know, you're taking whatever it is the system's working on, and that computer actually functions? Nobody can do that. And then, even you have learned how that does, the concepts of it, and all that, and you create it. And you deal with, you know, the source of it. Would anyone even know who the guy was that started the binary system that it works on? Right? Or anything, your car, how does that work? Or your tape recorder, or your watch? You might find that no. It's just there's a faith that scientific things are there, and we use the scientific things, therefore I am also scientific. Right? It's a natural thing. It's a natural seeming logic. But we see that actually people are still just going along. Why do they use it? Because people say you should use it. You don't use it, you're out of faith. Right? You don't wear the latest thing, do the latest thing, have the latest thing, and what? You don't have a computer. If you don't have a computer nowadays, people think you're weird. They actually do. How could you survive without a computer? Right? People somehow or another, you know, 30, 40 years ago were alive on that. How? Science is still doing a research on that. How people were living in the past without a computer. It's a great mystery. But nowadays, no. So we can see is that modern is just an idea that someone is modern. It means that you are just in the present and you are functioning in what is happening in the present. But now if we look at the concept of that modern being based on some science or some higher principles, right? Because modern should have some basis. What is that basis? Okay, science is there. Why is it there? Right? Are you organizing it? Am I organizing? Who's organizing it? Right? Businesses are organizing it, and governments are organizing it. Right? They're the ones that pay hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars for some person to sit in a room and do some work. Right? So why are they doing it? To raise standards of the society? To set a new trend for the cultivation of consciousness? Or to make money and to control the place? Right? So the standards they are setting are simply control, and you get money, you enjoy it. So it is materialistic. It is no different than the animals, a little more sophisticated. So then, modern man considers he's modern only because he's sophisticated. Right? A dog would come up and grab you by the throat and kill you. But the modern man can sit in his bunker somewhere and push a button on a computer and, you know, kill somebody. Like that. So, actually it's the sophistication. It's not actual modernness. If we're taking modern meaning, it's scientific, it's cultured, it's refined. Right? What is so refined about fast food? Right? How many people in the developed world know how to take raw ingredients and turn it into food? Right? I would say nowadays you find it's rare. I would say it's rare. Right? It used to be you go through a small town, let's just say you take in America, And if you sneezed or blinked, you know, any small distraction like that, you'd be through the town and wouldn't even notice. Right? You go right to the Midwest. Now it takes a little, you have to do at least two or three sneezes before you get through the town, because at least one McDonald's, one Pizza Hut, and one other thing, all these fast food places, you have to get past first, and they have, you know, parking lots and stuff. So it takes a little more time. Now that means those people in that village there are not surviving without those places. Right? In other words, even those rural people don't know how to take the stuff they grow and turn it into food. So then, where's the sophistication? Right? Up-to-date gentleman, you know, wears a pair of dungarees, right? The work pants, very sophisticated, right? It's got little pockets on the legs. You know, that's to carry all kinds of junk in, you know, because that was developed by the army. And everybody knows the army private out in the field in the mud is one of the most, you know, highest forms of refinement, refined society. Right? So then, what is so refined? And what is so scientific? The science, do they actually know who they are? Why things are, do they know why the material energy functions? What it's for? No. So the culture and the science are pretty backwards as far as progressive. Progressive meaning that one is moving forward towards knowing what human life is, what it's for, where you're going. So we can find is that here they're talking about the simple rural people of Vrindavan. They knew something of the high level of sophistication of the Vedic society. But then those who are very educated in those fields, they knew more. Like Krishna and Balaram, when they went to Mathura, then their parents, Devaki and Vasudev, decided, oh, now they should get educated. Right? Because at that age also, it's not too late that the Kshatriyas can go to school and become educated. Because they left Vrindavan when they were 10 years, well, at least Krishna was 10 years, 8 months old. So he's within the age limit to go to the Guru as a Kshatriya. So then he went, and then if you look in the Krishna book, in the chapter, at the end of the chapter on where Krishna, I think, returns the son of his teacher, then it gives all the things that Krishna learned. So that means he hadn't learned those in Vrindavan. Right? He knew how to herd the cows, and knew how to, so many aspects of the Vedic culture. But to the sophistication of knowledge and the refinement of the, you know, urban culture that you would find in Mathura or Dwarka or Hastinapur or these places, then he gained that in this, there. Because they knew about those things. The value that it was important for their duties, the Kshatriyas, the Brahmins, they function on that level of sophistication. Well, your business, your farming, and that didn't require that much sophistication in occupational or training. So then we see is those persons who were, you know, fully educated, they were what you call modern. Then here, Nanda Baba and those persons, they would be what you call rural. And today, what you call modern might be better just to be kind of like a up-to-date tribal. Because their purposes are no different. There's no difference between the guys in Papua New Guinea out there with their blowguns and the people in the city. Just their blowgun happens to be made out of a high-grade metal and shoots bullets without having to blow on it. That's the only difference. But their purpose is not much different. So then we can see as Prabhupada here in a very subtle way puts the whole system of civilization into perspective. Vedic civilization is modern. Knowing part of that is you're moving with it, and even such simple people also in the main culture do these things. And those who don't know these things can't really call them modern. You may call them contemporary, but you wouldn't call them modern. Just like at the time, Krishna is there, also there were tribals, and they didn't know what Nanda Maharaj and the other residents of Vraj know. Like this, there's always, the tribals are always, they're always there. There's no time when they're not there. So then we see in the whole civilization, then modern actually means one who actually knows he's up to date. If you're up to date, means you know what's going on. Know what's going on means you know who you are, who God is, and who the material world is. That's up to date. If you don't know that, you're not up to date. You don't actually know what's going on. So then here, in a very simple way, then Prabhupada makes this point. So it's just like such a matter-of-fact point, and it's just being said. So here, that is taken as the standard. Vedic culture is the standard. Knowledge and practice of that is the standard. And other things are below that standard. So that's just taken as a foregone conclusion. Then this, then speaking in this way is very natural. And now and again, just to, because someone may be arguing, but we're in 10th canto. Arguing has been done in cantos 1 to 9. Now it's time to understand what is actually the reality of the standard. Right? We're not dealing with our gross misgivings, our gross misunderstandings, the impersonalism, the voyeurism. No. Cantos 1 to 9 deal with that. Now we're dealing with the refinement within devotional service. You've come to terms with your misunderstandings, misgivings. And now, on that platform, now we are dealing with what is the actual standards of devotional service, how devotional service actually functions, what is required there, what is the rasa. So here, then, Prabhupada's pointing out is that it's a connection. Is that the gopis here, it's a simple way, and it was the best way. You can have more sophisticated ways, but it's not so important. Here it is very nice, simple, with the cow, with cow dung, with mantras connected to the Lord. The greatest protection can be given to a child, right? They didn't immediately go out, and Nanda Baba was telling to Yashoda Mai, I think we better, raise the quality of our life insurance here, or maybe we should get, does our policy cover witches? You know, like that, so they're going back and looking through, and oh, no, it doesn't, like that. So, no, they turn to this. Mantras about Krishna, then cows, these things like this that are given in the Shastras, that's the real protection. The other things can help, they're nice. These Krishna is going to protect us. We also have other things, you add it to that. So, in doing this process, one has to be very, very careful. It is. This is the reason that perspective must be seen. Otherwise, we are always going to have a tendency to take things from the perspective that I am looking at things right now. Okay, let us say, okay, protection means money and facilities, right? And, good down-home, just a practical intelligence. Okay? So let us say we take that as protection. Right? I'm smart, I'm clever, I got some money, I got some facilities, I can take care of myself. Okay? So let us say we take that. That is our perspective. Okay. Now, Prabhupada's not saying that now in that level that you are putting and the importance that you are giving to that, now you're going to remove that and put Krishna and these mantras and some cow dung in that place, and drop your money and your facilities and your intelligence below that. No, because then that is saying that a materialistic approach to Krishna consciousness is the proper standard. No, what Prabhupada is trying to point out here is, okay, you're thinking this is valuable. It is valuable. But you should know it in important in connection to also other things that are more valuable. You know? Just like you have a beggar in the street, and he finds, you know, some small thing that is useful to him. To him, it's very important. But for a very wealthy person, that's not so important. There are other things that are more important. Right? And one can say, okay, that this is okay, this is his perception, that's your perception, all perceptions are equal. Yes, if you're an impersonalist, great. But if you're a personalist, no. Because the thing is there is a standard. Right? There is a standard. It's just like, and it's universal. And why is it universal? Because it's been set by Krishna, who's a person. So Krishna has established, if you're dealing with wealth, then jewels, gems, diamonds, gold, these precious things are more expensive than a piece of wood or straw. Though, in the house, you wouldn't make a golden mat to lay on, right? You wouldn't, you know, stack up gold bricks as a mattress. Right? So therefore, for that, cotton is much superior. Right? But, as far as value, that cotton mattress does not cost as much as a gold brick. So, then, what Prabhupada's trying to point out here is, you value that so much, that's nice. No problem, we're not going to touch that. But what you have to understand is that you just kind of get up on your toes and peek over the top of your economic development, then you find that there's this whole ocean of transcendental understanding that is there. That is more valuable. So that's where Prabhupada says you don't have to change the position you're in. You have to change your consciousness. You think, my safety is the real thing. But the real thing is, well, what are you going to keep safe? You know? And how long are you going to keep it safe? So therefore, if you're talking about keep yourself safe, you're the soul. So the soul goes beyond. Money doesn't protect the soul. A house doesn't protect the soul. The family relationships don't protect the soul. Understanding that you are the soul, you have a relationship with Krishna, you have a relationship with the devotees, that's eternal. You know how to operate that relationship, that will protect you eternally. You want to protect your body, yes, you need a house, you need clothes, you need money. You want to protect the soul, that's another thing. So, since money is seen here, then the whole point is that means this other thing is a public. So, that's the whole point, is that modern civilization can be very nice. Above that is the understanding of the Vedic civilization that the simple rural people had. And above that is those who are fully knowledgeable in the science of the Vedic culture. As far as we're talking modern and sophistication goes. Right? So then then you have devotion, which goes beyond that. So it's a matter of, okay, this is important for me. It's not that you drop that and put the other thing. This is the reason culture has a problem being established. Because you have one whole here that you consider important. And then everything that you consider important today goes in that spot. And everything else gets dropped below that. So that means, once society doesn't progress. Because everything has to be at this level that I say is important. But no, that's here, this goes here, that goes below that goes above that. Then you start to build the culture, then you build the society. The problem is, okay, everybody sees it like this. And so then one person puts the philosophy there, someone else puts the money there, someone else puts their child there, someone else puts their wife there, someone else puts their anything there. Then it's a problem, because all these things are on the same level, because each man thinks what he thinks is more important than the other person. So it's all at the same level. There isn't any difference. So there is no society, there is no culture, there is no interaction. Otherwise, how do you know how to interact? Because you put what he says is important in another spot. So then it won't match. Right? It just won't match. It's just like you have your car, you think it's important. Right? Someone else thinks it's a nice decoration in the backyard, you know, and growing ivy over the top. Now can that gardener and that mechanic have a nice conversation about a car? No. Never. Even though they may consider, oh, the car in the backyard with the ivy growing over is one of the nicest pieces in the garden. But that mechanic and that gardener will never be able to see eye to eye. Right? So you have to put everything in its proportion. Right? Then it has some meaning. So then therefore the car is not considered a garden item. Okay, it's just the body of the car, there's no chassis, no interior, it's just a shell. Then you put it in the backyard, who cares? Even the mechanic will think, oh, okay, I always wanted to, you know, I got a backyard full of those, maybe I should go some ivy. Right? But if it's a brand new car that you can drive, then everyone will say the garden is crazy. But the gardener, no, what's wrong? Because to him, aesthetics in the garden is the most important thing. So once you know where to place things, what's higher, what's lower, what has more prominence, less prominence, then if there's a common standard amongst people, then they can interact. But until that's in place, it will be difficult. So then it comes to be, okay, yes, we accept that, that's very nice, and so each individual then will make a list of what he figures is the items of importance. But the problem is still you're going to get the difficulty. So if you want all the people of the world to be able to function together and interact together, then you have to have one standard. And so, who is that one person that you can take a standard from that does connect to every living entity in the cosmic creation? And that's God. Then you have a harmonious standard that everyone can fit into. Right? Then if you approach that standard with the mood of the Acharyas, then they will say how you operate those standards. Then you can be very broad-minded and accommodate everybody in that system. Because Krishna says there's only one path. He doesn't say there's many paths. He doesn't agree with those who say, you know, how many paths, there's that many ways. He doesn't agree with that. He says there's one path, and not only one path, it's his path. So then that means he's already placed every item that any living entity thinks is important already on that path. It's already in place. Now it's just a matter of recognizing the path, educating ourselves as to that path. Someone who's educated in what is that path, that person is modern. Someone who knows the path, you know, generally that this path is there, but basically only knows their area, then they are more simple. Those people who don't know that their path exists, they're backward. That's the reality. Right? That's the reality. Because otherwise, then what means the thing is we have to break this idea that the modern society really has something to offer to us. I guarantee you, You could look into any of these simple, backward, aboriginal, or tribal, whatever nomenclature, the up-to-date, urban person wants to give them, and look into their social system. And you might find the relationships in the family have more meaning. They're able to sit down without a television, without so many other distractions, and actually live together. They probably had a much lower divorce rate, or in fact, none at all. But it's unsophisticated, yes. No one's denying that. So we're not saying that the urban, sophisticated person is going to now live like the person from Papua New Guinea. No. What we're saying is something is there that they are catching. Why? Because they are probably following the standard unknowingly in their simplicity closer to the standard which is set. So my point is modern society is sophisticated. That we will guarantee. When you sit down, it's like you've got how many forks and spoons, this guy and that way, and glasses and all these things. That is sophisticated. Yes. Whether it's important or not, that's another discussion. But one must acknowledge it is sophisticated. A lot of thought, many centuries have gone into this. So it is sophisticated, but it is not developed as far as human nature and culture goes. It's not. It really isn't. So then one can see is that what is it that the modern society, what we call today modern, has to offer to the life of the devotee? The culture. It gives them more gadgets, not the culture. But what does it offer? Yukta Vairagya means you may take the things of the material world and engage it in Krishna service. The culture we have our own. That we must remember. Prabhupada and the Acharyas lived their own culture, but used whatever was contemporary developed. Right? Rupa and Sanatana sat up the trees in their copas, right? Following their own culture, but they did use parchment, the first paper that had come into India. Because the first paper came to Akbar. And from Akbar, it made its way down to Rupa Goswami. And next, the devotion was written on the first paper available in India. But he didn't go out and get himself a briefcase and all these other things to match with his up-to-date. No. Our own culture we follow, we use the thing. This is the real meaning of Yuga Vairagya. If you take the culture, that's not Yuga Vairagya. You've been caught by Maya. You haven't vairagyed anything. And the yukta is not necessarily yoga mind, but maha. So it has to be very, very careful in this. Right? What they say, it's so simple. Why is it Krishna consciousness is so simple and unsophisticated, but our own personal life is very sophisticated? So that means then we haven't actually engaged our sophistication in Krishna's service. And if we haven't done that, that means our body, mind, and words haven't really been engaged in Krishna's service. So until the sophistication that we culturally function out is fully engaged at that level of sophistication in Krishna consciousness, then we can't say we're fully engaged. So then where is that civilization that is sophisticated enough to match our urban mentality other than the pagan? There isn't a system of cooking more refined. There's not a system of dressing, of ornament, of, right? What ornaments in the West? The wealthiest woman, what does she have? A string of pearls? A gold choker? A couple of earrings? Maybe a couple of rings, one or two rings. Right? And then you go, if you ever have an opportunity, to a wedding in India by, you know, sophisticated city people who got money. And then you compare. Right? Now, if you think about it, all the finest, you have your gold lame, your finest, your chiffons. That's not cloth the people that the Anglo-Saxons wore in their huts in, you know, the moors of England. That comes out of this place right here. Right? Fine spices, fine scents come out of this place here. The people that had the money, had the sophistication to appreciate something refined, were sending their ships and caravans here. Spices did not come from Europe, right? They come from here. Fine clothes, fine ornaments, they come from here. So then we see is that whatever little bit of sophistication is there means that we really find it's, you know, refined is also coming from here. You can trace it back. So one really has to think hard, what is it that the modern culture has to offer? Realistically, if we really want to practice Yukta Vairagya, that means there must be some Vairagya. So with the detached mentality, we have to analyze it. Just because we like it, we attach to it, we grew up in it, it's not really enough. Then we can't say we're sophisticated. Because sophisticated means you're logical, you're scientific, and all the things we say modern culture is, that Vedic's not. But we see here that the Acharyas beg to differ. That the modern or contemporary society is just a bunch of sophisticated sentimentalists who are simply interested in gratifying the senses. And the person who is following the Vedic culture, they are actually sophisticated and modern. So it's a very different view. And this is the view held by Krishna. So now one just has to figure who one wants to stand behind. Krishna and the Acharyas and their viewpoint. Or, you know, so many authors that you find in, you know, proliferated in, you know, any bookshop, decent bookshop that has, you know, contemporary literature. That's the choice. So then, Srila Prabhupada, as devotees, is just going on the principle naturally devotees want to align themselves with Krishna and the Acharyas. And since we're in a modern environment, engage that in Krishna's service. But according to the principles given by the Acharyas. So that is. And Prabhupada says that people should know how to do this. For this is a part of Vedic civilization. They should know how to do this because this is just part of how it works. That's the real thing. Right? It means you want to protect your child after calamity. Then, you know, you get out, you know, this is how you do it. Turn to Krishna, not the email. Right? Any questions or comments?
Then you got to say what is right, and how you can say what is right, because you say no, this is right. For example, the short skirts are not right, the long skirts are not nice. And then some other place, other time, or same place, another time, it will change. The short skirt will be nice at this and that, and everybody thinks that that's a culture, and then like that. So how you can say what is
right? What is the standard? Okay, the question is the discussion happened with one person, and they were making the point, how can you say what is standard? Because someone is saying that the long skirt is standard, someone else is saying the short skirt is standard, because at any time, different places, different seasons, it all changes anyway. So how can you say what is standard? Because God makes the standard. That's all. So, and you can understand these standards in certain situations. Right? You just have to know how to test those standards. Okay, maybe the girl has a skirt that's short enough you can see her underwear. Great. Now, let us say she had some very, very big, important situation to go through that actually had an implication on her future, on the rest of her life. Do you think she'd wear that skirt? No. She considered that it's more life and sporting. Right, it's for it's that's the thing. So, yeah, sport. You know, like fishing's a sport, or hunting's a sport. Like, yeah, like it's something like that. But it means if she's going to go out, where it's going to have an effect on her job or political situation, or she's going to wear something she will consider to be formal. And you'll find that things that are formal, basically all over the world, are pretty much accepted. So you have to know where to test something. Everything is tested at a certain time. Just like in adversity, that's when we test friendship. Like somebody's done something wrong, let's say. And so one person has a very strong opinion towards that wrong thing. So naturally, because person A has done something wrong, this person B, with a strong opinion against what he's done wrong, considers person A to be, you know, an absolute write-off that no one in the free world should be associated with. Now, person C happens to be a friend of person A. And even though he's done something wrong, because it's a long-standing friendship, then he says, okay, well, you've done this wrong, but, you know, you've got to, you know, see what's wrong, you have to move forward, you have to get it together, you have to like this. Person B is questioning his mind, how can person C maintain any kind of connection with person A because of what he's done? But, according to Shastra, that's where you test the friendship. If in adversity you're not a friend, and one is doing situated nicely, you are a friend, that person is not really a friend. You're an acquaintance, yes, but not a friend. So that means person B does not know what friendship is. Never had a friend, may never have a friend. Because if he ever knew what a friendship was, he wouldn't say that. He may say, hey, you're a good friend, why don't you tell him to get it together? But to say, how can you associate, how can you talk to it? That means the person saying that does not know what a friendship is. And there's a good shift sense that they don't know what a friendship is, they don't know what any other relationship is either. Because parents are also your best friend. You know, your wife or your spouse or that is also your best friend. Those who are loyal servants are also best friends. Right? You know, and of course, dog is man's best friend. So therefore we see is that friendship is the common theme throughout. So the good chance, the person who's made that statement doesn't know what any of those five relationships are. They may think they know, but they don't know. Because they don't know what rasa is. They know what attachment is. Yes, anybody has a child, they're attached to it. Guaranteed. But whether they actually know what's a parent-child relationship, that's another question. They're two different things. Attachment is a motive to operate that parent-child relationship on a high standard. But it doesn't mean that you know what the standard is. This is a serious mistake in the modern culture, you know, the contemporary culture. They take the two as automatic. You know, someone who's not married doesn't know what it's like being a parent. Someone who is knows. It's absolutely bogus. Prabhupada says, first class man comes by hearing, second class by seeing, third class by experience. So what they're saying is the first class man, the third class man, is the first class. That is contemporary society. By hearing what is the real parental relationship, the first class man knows it and can operate it. Now, he may not have the attachment to do it. Therefore, he doesn't get married. He doesn't have children. But it doesn't mean he doesn't know what it is. And just because they have children doesn't mean they know what they're doing. There's tons of children that are neglected in this world because the parents actually don't know. They figure that their attachment is enough. And that the taste of attachment is rasa. It is rasa, but it's rasa on not on the five main. It's outside that. So because their attachment is connected to the kid, they mistake that this is parental rasa. No, this is just attachment to children. So therefore, Krishna sets the standards. The acharyas then show us actually which standards or which elements we get involved. This is a standard for everything. Every last item, every last atom in the material world is standardized by Krishna. You know? But depending upon what particular view you're taking, then you're going to situate yourself. So since we want to situate ourselves on the transcendental platform, therefore how we're going to view Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha is going to have a particular angle. But where they're placed, that's already been done by Krishna. And because our view is bhakti, therefore some of these standards that are set aren't so important to us. Just like for a pig, there is qualities in stool. I mean, for a pig, when they go out in the day and make their rounds, to them, some is, you know, good and some is not so good, but something's better than nothing. Right? You know, pigs have to be practical, right? They're very pragmatic people. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's not an important thing for us. So therefore, in our sphere of activities, those standards are left on the side. So the acharyas point out of the unlimited standards, okay, we take this many, you know, 100 or 1,000. And not only that, because we're seeing those in connection with Krishna, we have to see them as means to get to bhakti. They're never an end. The attachment to the child can't be an end. There must be a purpose to attachment. Otherwise, attachment for attachment's sake, it's sentimental. So how is that modern? No. Means the attachment to the child, because it's there, is going to be one of the ways you're going to connect yourself to Krishna. How? By serving Krishna. It means by dealing with that child, how Krishna says that child should be dealt with. And teaching them about Krishna. Then it has a connection. Otherwise, what's the difference between those puppies out there and their relationship with their mother and one of the mothers around here? No difference. She's also attached. Yeah. One cannot say my attachment is better than her attachment. That would be a little self-centered. Right? The point is the experience is exactly the same. That's the fun. There is no difference. Right? You know, when the dog sitting there, the puppies come up and snuggle up and whimper and all this, the mother feels the same happiness that a human mother feels when her kid does the same thing. Of course, if they, you know, bark and sit back, wag their tail, the human mother might get a little bit worried, but as long as it's, you know, more commonly thought of human noises that babies are supposed to make, you know, yes, then experience is the same. That's why Prabhupada says eating, sleeping, mating, and defending are common to all species of life. There is none different. So then what makes a human different? He can go beyond that, connecting to Krishna. So then they're talking about higher rasa. Yes. Because attachment is on the platform of the senses. And then you can extend that to your child, or to your family, or to your dog, or to whatever is important to you. But that's the limit. So it doesn't go beyond the second platform of consciousness. So the farthest that modern society can get is that second platform. But the Vedic platform starts with the third level of consciousness, which is religion. What is the actual nature? What is the duty? What is the relationship? That's where it starts. And if you have that, the other two are included. Right? If you have your 100 rupee note, your 10, your 5 rupees are already included. So if you have 5 rupee note, your 100 rupees are included. Now, why that platform? Because that platform interfaces with the transcendental. Because the third platform of consciousness is the natural reflection of the spiritual world. Below that, it's not. In other words, the third is connected with the fifth. And the first and second, you can connect to the third. Right? Your senses and extended sense gratification, you can connect to religion. And religion, you can connect to God. You don't take your senses and connect them to God. You know, it just doesn't work. You take your senses, engage them according to the religious principles, that can be then offered to God. Does that make sense? So therefore there is a standard like that. And we also can't speculate, we have to see what the acharya said. Does that make sense?
The average person doesn't have a pair of food anymore.
Yeah.
Some might say, well, we don't have a pair of food, but instead of preparing, spending 3 hours preparing the food, we'll go to pizza, I don't go buy frozen pizza, and then spend the evening swimming out of the lake. So, we don't have a food, we just know how to use our time better.
That's a good point.
The other day said, well, I'm flying to Delhi because I'd rather go out and work for a couple hours than buy a plane ticket. So it's a matter of, you know, priorities and values, and you know, one's not better than the other, it's just what one prefers. So I want to sit on the train, and some I want to get early.
Yeah, very nice point. It's been brought up is that, you know, we made the comment about most people don't know how to cook or, you know, these different things. So, but the point is brought out, well, maybe it is actually they do know how to cook, but they made a conscious decision not to cook. Because they considered, why spend 3 hours cooking when, you know, we could just call up, you know, just, yeah, call up for a pizza or get a frozen pizza and, you know, and throw it into your microwave, push it about 2 minutes and got yourself a fresh pizza. And then they can spend the time, you know, quality time down at the lake swimming together, right? So, you know, or we see a businessman decides he'd rather fly to Delhi and use the time, you know, spent for making money than wasting it on the train, right? Then he makes less money. Okay, so now it should be noted that these two have been put together. Because this will make it makes a very important point. In other words, making money is artha. Going out to the pond is also artha. It's also something to gain, some sense gratification. Here you've taken the family, it's extended. You went alone, it would be singular. But in both of these, why? Why you would make that choice? Why do you need more money? Why at the lake? Why would you be sitting at the lake, quality time with your family, rather than around the dinner table? There is an English saying, the family that eats together stays together. I've never heard of a family that swims together stays together. Because swimming, someone's over here, someone's sitting on the side, someone's laying in the sun, someone, they're not really together. But when they eat, then there's much more of a sense of community. Also, then if you look at it, okay, swimming together is a great time. But now, when you think of a mother, do you think of somebody you want to go out swimming with? Right? Mothers nourish and nurture. They do that by swimming with you, right? No, they do it because they cook for you. Now, if we're going to put together that twice-born frozen pizza, you know, that is going to carry the same emotional meaning as something that the mother just spent 3 hours cooking, then yes, one has to look at it. It is a matter of values. You want to be out swimming with your mother, or you want to, or that kind of a relationship, which is more valuable? And actually, you'll find out the kids, actually, they like to go down to the lake also, not the swim with the mother. The girls, you know, they also have come down with a lot better than the mother. Right? And the daughters, I'm looking at the boys also there, they look a bit better than the father. Right? The punch is not quite so big. You know, like that. So then we look at it, and it's there. So now, yeah. So then you have to see what is the value system. Right? So if relationships are what's valuable, you might change that. You know? It may change that. Because the pool, what did your mother do to that pool to make it, to put her input into that? Nothing but the food she did. So, in other words, the whole relationship is through a third party. The contemporary family has relationships with each other through a third party. They don't have direct relationships. It doesn't exist. It has to have a television, it has to have, you know, a restaurant, it has to have a movie, it has to have something else. Then they sit together, and that's called quality time together. They're not interfacing with each other, except now and again, you see that, and you know, wow, that was great, you know. But that's it, you know, and then you sit there, have someone sit on the side, and every time they go, wow, that was great, and you click the button, okay, 1 more second of quality time together. And then at the end of the day, add it up. Wow, hey, this family is really, really an exemplary family. They had 5 seconds today of quality time together. You know, where they actually interacted with each other, right? Of course, we might have to take on off the 1 second that the daughter got upset because when she was looking the other way, because, you know, the other brother made some noise, then, her third brother went into the bathroom first and she had to stand outside, so then, what's something wrong with this man? So, we might have to remove that, you know, but other than that, it's pretty good frame for 5 seconds. So that would be the thing is, yes, it is a matter of values. What are the values? Direct relationships. So in other words, one may argue that food is also a third party, but it's not. It's actually an expression of the mother's affection. So it's just an expansion of the mother. Does that make sense? see what is what. But I would still stand on my point is they don't know how to cook. Because in my travels over the last 5 years, it's rare to find a cook. It's rare. Well, I would say when I traveled around in the 70s, I would say you find a lot of cooks. I may learn it as a bonus. But nowadays, it's rare. I mean, they can get it cooked, yes. That's there. But to say that they are a cook, that's another thing. They don't know. I mean, if you've never been in the kitchen except for, you know, to make a cup of coffee for the first 20 years of your life, you know, then it maybe you don't have the same quite so much experience. So no one's going to be blamed. All I'm saying is that because things have changed so much, you can't say that there's actually any culture there. What is the culture? You know, is there, can we say that there is a, that America has a culture of eating? Right? It means you can say, okay, the burger, you know. They might be able to claim that. I think they can. Sandwich, they couldn't. That's the Earl of Sandwich made up in England. Apple pie, okay, apple pie, okay. But how often do you get that? Pumpkin pie also, yes, that's even more rare again. There's still the concept of a pie in America. You know, just they had a proliferation of, you know, pumpkins and turkeys, so, you know, I had to do something. So, it doesn't really have, you know, what is American dress? Right? Formal dress that they from Europe. Okay, the jeans and the t-shirt, okay. Running shoes, okay. You know. You know what I'm saying? It's like, where is it? You know, it means this elusive American culture. Maybe we should set up a committee to do some research or send out some people to actually hunt it down, bring the things to the ground, and then, make some drawings of, you know, I think of a DNA sample, or something, or something.
You won't find that maybe in New York.
You know, so that's common ground there. So then the problem is the person from that, you know, countryside, you know, from Palermo there, they cannot figure out how it is that these, you know, people function in the big city. So not knowing that, he doesn't know where the common ground is. He doesn't know yet to go down to the Yankee Stadium to find the common ground. Like that. So then once you know that, then you can kind of function in that society if you want to. But in other words, if there's ever a doubt about something, then just start taking it back. Means take whatever is the item and place that, and then take Krishna. And then follow step by natural, logical, step by step what it takes to get to Krishna. Then count the number of steps in between, then you basically know where it goes on the path. You know? So it's like chanting. Well, the chanting is Krishna. So that's basically this then. You know, you know, the baseball game, it might take quite a few steps to kind of somehow or another bring in the connection. You know, it's like, okay, the human form, human life needs some kind of activities in which they can forget the day-to-day activities. It's called Utsava, a festival. Ud means to rise above, sava means misery. So when we say we're having utsava, it's because you forget all the problems, your family problems, your business problems, everything, when there's a festival. So you're risen above your problems for some time. Everybody needs that breath of air. So, okay, so you're risen above by going out to the baseball game. So it finds its place. Now, but what it rose you up to, it was just, it rose away, but it didn't actually connect you with anything higher. You know, it didn't connect something, it was just something, you know, and then it drops back down. So then, okay, that's there. So then, human life needs it. What is a human supposed to be doing? Right? He needs that, but what is the occupation? He's doing this and that. And then, therefore, then what would be other ways that you could find that relief or that release from that? And then you'll find that comes out higher. So you have to first connect it in that it is a, how do you say, inborn need of the human social animal. Then you have to then get that animal to the human platform. Then the human platform through Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and then get them from that to Bhakti. So you can connect it, but it's very, very lengthy. So that's, if there's any doubt on something, just start using that process. Then you'll see what's actually higher and lower. So then the final comment there is that the therefore Prabhupada's book, he was saying that when he was saying that 30 years ago, that 50 years before, is that, you know, there was always something happening in the society, the temples, the homes, that there was always like a Mahabharata performance, some different kind of thing that was connected to Krishna. And so that way then people would have that relief from the day, his work, the activities. So that was much more connected. Definitely closer than Yankee Stadium. So there might be some people who would argue that point, but not to be shared.
Also, about the first movie that Ben Bengal
was actually from. Oh, yeah, you made a point, is that one of the first movies made in Bengal, in Bengali, was Nilachal Mahaprabhu. Yeah, come along. Yeah. 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 Yeah.